God at the movies. It is the general idea that God is at work everywhere. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you can hear not just God speaking, but also the cries of humanity, the questions people have, the stories that are resonating in culture and in societies. Engage with what it is that the media, the movies, the TV shows, critically think through them, and not in a way where you're like critiquing them all the time, but in a way where you're engaging with them in a meaningful way. What is it about this that resonates with you? What's true about it? What's false about it? What are the claims of this that are not true? What are the things that are happening? We shouldn't turn our brain off. We shouldn't turn our spirit off. We shouldn't turn God off, ever. How do we begin to attune to stories that move us, why they move us, how we see God at work in the world? So this is a series kind of along those lines.
All right. Welcome to The Right Side Up with Danielle Strickland.
And James Shaw.
James, where are you from?
I'm from England originally.
Where do you live now?
I'm in Toronto now.
What do you do with your life?
I am a pastor, Danielle. This is an unscripted interview. I'm a pastor.
Can you imagine if we scripted an interview? How weird that would sound on this podcast.
That's true.
Where do you pastor?
I'm the pastor of a church called Wellspring Worship Center, which is in the north part of Toronto.
Yeah, if you're in Toronto sometime and you want to stop by, what time are your services?
Oh, our services are at 10:30 on Sunday mornings.
Nice.
I'll be honest, I desperately try to get us to start on time, and people like hanging out, which is lovely. I'm really glad.
You have a very welcoming community. If you want to go to a church where you feel really welcome and people talk to you and actually call you by name and want to know your name, and it's lovely, welcoming community.
I'm really proud of that, but I can't really take credit for it either. I think that's been part of their DNA for a while, which probably why they thought maybe James will be a good fit. But people love talking to one another, which means I can't get the service to start. And I'm like, you can talk afterwards. So we started having monthly meals as well, because people just want to talk to each other the whole time. Like, cool. Well,
is it always the same monthly meal? Like, is it always the last Sunday of the month?
Oh, good question. I think it's like usually the second-ish, give
second
or take. But
Sunday of the month.
Kind of depends on what. But if you go on our website, which is wellspringtoronto.ca, we have up-to-date things. And I've never done a plug for our church before. I don't know. The church is really lovely and everyone there is lovely. And I know there's lots of people that have been really wounded by church. And it seems that Wellspring seems to be a place that people that have been wounded can feel safe again, which is an incredible privilege. So that's like one of the favorite parts of what I do, I suppose.
That's beautiful. And it does occur to me, one of the reasons why I wanted to feature your church is that I know of a lot of people who've been wounded by church and who don't know where to go to feel safe or to heal. So here's one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And radically welcome, affirming.
Yep.
Inclusive. And beautiful hands and feet of Jesus in the community, and trying to love your neighbors well, and all the things.
Just really trying to keep Jesus at the center of all things. And when you keep Jesus at the center, you realize those things we disagree on aren't quite as important, because Jesus is more important than them.
So I'm going to talk to you more about some of those decisions you came to as a church and that process and stuff at another time.
It's an ongoing process.
Yeah, there's lots of learning there, though. Beautiful. All right. Well, we are in the middle of a series, God at the Movies, and series and TV shows, and on our couch with a remote and
God,
some other fancy.
God at the media. Of
God past the popcorn.
Yeah, that's
that
like, yeah, popcorn time with Jesus. That's
But God past the popcorn, I like. That's growing on me a little bit this minute.
By the end of this series, we'll have a name that we're happy with.
We are going to talk about a movie that James loves. And
oh,
he
man.
Made me watch this last year before we were doing this thing. He's like, you have got to see this movie. And I want to say right now, this is an American comedy horror film. So just so you know, that's what the genre is, comedy horror.
And you definitely need to probably enjoy both of those things.
Yeah, it is dark and foreboding.
I'm not super into horror. I'd say like it's very dark. I think dark psychological more than horror, perhaps.
Well, I was telling you about the show Midnight Mass, which I think you should watch and we should talk about.
Okay,
but that also is in this genre. It would be a horror slash, I don't even know if it's that funny. This one's more comedy. This one's maybe just horror. But it's very fascinating. It's worth talking about. So we'll see if James gets to it before we talk again.
I reckon I can do it.
I don't know if anyone else. I think it was recommended on Twitter. Somebody said Midnight Mass.
Oh, cool.
Okay. So somebody mentioned it. But anyway, the menu, give us a little bit of an introduction to this film.
Yeah. So the I will say I really, really like food. I like to cook. I'm not very good at cooking, but I like cooking. I like going out for food. I don't. If you've ever seen what I look like in real life, I look like a person that doesn't take very good care of themselves. Really, the only thing I spend money on is food, which is not to say I go to fancy places, because there's amazing places in Toronto that you can eat for $15. But going out for food is one of my favorite things. And this film, I think, really loves food, actually. Mm. I remember the movie Chef with Jon Favreau. Did you ever watch that one? Clearly, like, that movie loved food as well. It really appreciated it and had fun with it.
Yeah.
This movie really loves food as well. But the performances carry it in such a way. And I think the theme is wonderful too. So you're kind of set up. I would say watch this film if you haven't watched it, because it's just excellent.
If you like horror, like
if you're okay with very dark comedy, dark, I'll say
and dark and some violence, like some weird,
it's pretty weird violence. It's the very dark elements, so I look for the
just
content
a little
warning
there. But if you think dark comedy is a thing, then you're probably like it.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
This is so Steven, you're not gonna like this movie. You're probably not gonna want to watch it. Just put that out there. And like my mom, and
also my
James
I know my mom would dig it, actually. My dad might though.
Okay,
my dad would like him.
Okay.
So there's some people in our lives who would appreciate this. But it's set up that essentially a group of kind of very exclusive elite people are going to
super
a very
wealthy,
exclusive elite restaurant on this island, just
private,
kind of off the shore. So
yeah, a private island. Celebrity chef.
Yeah, they're picked up on a private yacht and then taken to this island, and the meals cost like $2,000 a plate or something, and there's all of like 10 tables in this very, very exclusive
everybody
restaurant.
Stays there. It's a weekend, right?
Yeah, you like you uh-huh. stay there, and the kind of it's 7 courses, so you sit around and you wait for the meals and really make the most of it. But
And it's all a secret menu. Nothing's leaked.
Yeah, that's right.
And no, so the staff all live there too, and they have to stay sequestered and secret.
And this guy's considered to be the sort of greatest chef in the world kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So everyone wants to eat at his restaurant. So you have these different people in the restaurant. You have this food critic, you have a movie star, you have some tech bros, mm-hmm. and you have the closest thing to a protagonist this movie has. The kind of two protagonists, Nicholas Holt and the person playing his
Anya
girlfriend.
Anya
Taylor-Joy, who is there.
Ralph Fiennes is the chef.
Ralph Fiennes is, all three of them. Again, I think that the performances in this movie are just singular. I think they're absolutely amazing.
Yeah, Ralph Fiennes is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the way that this movie develops is they kind of start with the first course. And then there's a second call, and kind of more and more stuff gets revealed, and you see these darker overtones develop throughout. So the first course is actually kind of rocks and salt and unique plants from the island, which again they're very excited by. The second one, and this is I think that where it really starts to take off, is the breadless bread course. So in lots of restaurants, they'll give you bread in between your meals, and the chef says this is where you usually get bread, but bread is for people who the common people bread is for people who work. You are too exclusive for bread, so you get the breadless bread course. And so they just get like oils and a stick to dip in the oils because they don't have any bread, because he's like, no, bread are for poor people, you're not going to waste your time with bread. And you have sort of some people react badly and like, where's my bread, like just get me some bread. The person who kind of starts as a protagonist is just like, this is brilliant. He's a real kind of sycophant for the chef
He also is like one of those, he knows it all. Like he's trying to know it all, and he's trying to ingratiate himself to the chef.
Yeah.
So he's trying too hard. And so in essence, he's basically agreeing with anything the chef says.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to suck up
to
the chef.
Total sycophant.
So it's just like gross. It's like that gross, like.
And then he's really disappointed. Like he doesn't want to let the chef down.
Yeah,
and so
he's scared to answer for himself because he wants to answer the right answer instead of his answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we see these things kind of develop, and it becomes.
And he brought somebody he wasn't supposed to.
Yeah, that's right.
This is what puts a wrinkle in the plan. So this event has been planned meticulously. Like the chef obviously has like OCD or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Very. So he's planned the whole thing meticulously down to the last final detail, except that when he gets off the ferry, this guy who is the main, one of the main characters, instead of bringing his wife, brings an escort.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the escort is not expected by the chef. And she's, because she's common people.
Yeah.
And so it throws a wrinkle into his whole plan for the whole weekend, because he's like, I don't want this to be a common.
And it starts you thinking that he's very exclusive and elite and says, like, we don't want poor people. But actually, his plan is to kind of expose and punish these rich people. And he says, and I don't them. Actually. Well, if you're going to spoil things, Danielle, sure.
His plan is literally to end the whole experience with death for everybody. So he has a plan, and she's a wrinkle in the plan, because that's not his intent, is to hurt. So there's all these themes in this thing. There's like, there's a food culture. And all the courses mean stuff. So you did the breadless one. Do you have any other courses that you want to?
There's also, well, again, this is where it gets really dark. Okay? Really, content warnings for all kinds of things you think you need content warnings for. But there's someone who aspires to be a really impressive chef and then kills himself, right, as his kind of like coup de grace. And they have a really great meal that he's prepared, but ultimately says, like, you'll never be that good, so what's the point in trying, kind of thing. So it's a criticism of, I think, like, perfectionism.
I think it's also, so the whole thing is also predicated on this classism, this exclusive, you know, sort of like, and these people who are paying and demanding people's lives for their entertainment and enjoyment, but not even, they're not really even enjoying it. And that's one of the great themes of the movie, is that, you know, this thing that you're paying $2,000 for because I'm so incredible and I've really literally spent my whole entire life bending to your every demand, and you won't even finish it. You don't even eat it. You're not even enjoying it.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the great. So I think that scene where that guy is like, I've got nothing to aspire to, is partly like, I felt like when I saw that, I was like, these people are killing people for their own enjoyment all the time. Like, in a sense, that's what this classism thing, like, you guys work for us and you'll work yourself to death. And this was just like a literal version of that. But you're going to work yourself to death, and I'm still not even going to appreciate your food.
Yeah. There's
I'm not going to appreciate the gift that you've toiled for, or that you've sacrificed for, or that you've given your creative energy for, because I'm that exclusive, because I'm that rich that I can't even enjoy the thing that you did.
Yeah. There's a part of the movie where she essentially breaks into the kind of head chef Ray Fiennes' living quarters, and just sees the pictures of him getting progressively more miserable. And the one picture of him looking happy is him cooking a cheeseburger, you know, 30 years ago or something. And it's clear that the joy.
And the interview, she reads it's an interview, and she reads the interview.
That's right.
And he says in the interview, like, I just love making something people enjoy.
Yeah.
And that's why that theme keeps coming back, because it's literally, he's critiquing a culture that doesn't even enjoy what they're doing.
Doesn't really appreciate it, doesn't enjoy it.
This isn't even about joy anymore. It's about something else. It's about performance. It's about staging. It's about exclusivity. It's about saying you got something that you don't even need or want.
You get to eat it, and that makes you're important because you're doing the thing. It's very performative.
Yeah. Right? There's nothing sort of spontaneous, nothing joyful about it, nothing. So that's part of the exaggeration. So he's performing an exaggerated version of the perversion that is this, like, exclusive, hyper wealthy, I'm going to just do this for status instead of for joy. And I'm going to do this to taste it, but not even be sustained by it.
Yeah.
Like, there's all this kind of, like, themes that are coming out in this movie.
Yeah. We're really spoiling the ending here, I suppose, but if you're this far in and need more convincing, one of the wonderful ways the movie ends is that the kind of the closest thing we have to a hero heroine, I suppose, she says, I'm still hungry. Like, you haven't even fed us. So there's a part where during the breadless bread course, he comes over and says, you haven't touched your food. And she just says, but this isn't food. And at the end, she says, I'm still hungry. Like, can you just make me a cheeseburger?
Yeah. So she's snuck in and read this interview and realizes the last time this guy experienced the joy of his art was when he made cheeseburgers. So she says to him, I just like a cheeseburger.
Just nothing fancy. Just make me a basic cheeseburger, nothing fancy. And so this is something I went deep on this and started reading different theories on it. So she has a bite and then says, I'm afraid my eyes are too big for my stomach. Can I take this to go? Mm-hmm. And then he boxes this cheeseburger up and she runs off whilst everyone else.
Well, it's their exchange of she identified his actual calling.
Yeah.
I felt like, and he responded by doing the very thing he always wanted to do, which was to make people happy, making something that would sustain them. And then her, like, can I get this to go, is code for, can I leave?
Well, so I think it's part that, but it's also part rich people never get food to go. So like even
so it's
there,
like her saying, I'm not
like
gonna
I'm poor.
Waste it.
Like you know, I'm poor. You know, I'm poor.
So
and
it's
like
a class.
These other people throw their food away. Poor people get that.
Right.
And so I want to be clear. I get my food to go all the time. If there's ever any left, then, there's no. But rich people don't need to because well, I'll just get whatever I want fresh next time.
Right.
So I think even that there's so many of these little comments in here that show that you know she appreciates it. She's had a hard life. She's not one of these people.
Yes.
And it is interesting because it's not just a
it
kind
did
of
did look like a delicious.
Oh man, I make a decent cheeseburger. I can.
I was like, you watch this guy prepare this cheeseburger. Like, it literally is the last thing he's gonna do.
Yeah, it literally is. And it is an amazing looking cheeseburger.
Oh my goodness! And then she's like, "Can I have it to go?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'll box it for you," which is code for you can go.
Yeah.
And she escapes.
Yeah, it's so much of this movie is just wonderful. There's a couple,
the guy's gets his ring finger cut off.
Yeah, that's
in
right.
In one of the horses.
Yeah.
And it's sort of symbolic of his cheating.
Yeah, that's right.
And then she knows. And so it's also just an expose of the pretentious way people are living that's not
and
authentic
he can't, like,
or truthful.
Remember a single course, like they've eaten at the restaurant 7 times and he can't remember a single course. He said, why are you even here?
Right.
And they say there's these kind of tech bros who just say like, we'll just buy out the restaurant. Then we'll show him, he can't do anything. You kind of recognize that when all of these people realize that all this kind of power and influence they have means nothing here.
Right.
And I think that's such a wonderful turning when, again, you need to watch this movie, but he basically turns everyone into s'mores at the end. That's how everyone dies.
That's the end. They're s'mores.
And he gives a speech about how, like, you have destroyed all my enjoyment for life, so I'm going to take it from you too. And everyone just resigned to it as well, which I think is quite interesting. Just everyone is just kind of resigned to the reality.
Yeah, it's actually interesting to watch the crowd, like the crew, because they're first it's disbelief, like they kind of walk through all of these, like it's not really happening, and then it's only happening because of somebody specific and it's not me, so I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then it's like it gets increasingly weirder and worser in like in its realities, and you just see all the levels of like this can't be happening. And then some people try to do something and they can't, none of their normal, you know, wealthy exclusive things work.
Yeah.
And so they're rendered paralyzed, which is what sets this other woman apart too.
Yeah.
Because she figures out a way to get to where no one else is, everyone else is afraid to leave.
Yeah.
And she figures out a way to get to the bathroom, and then from the bathroom figures out a way to try to, so like she also is got some agency.
Yeah.
Which in that setting she wouldn't have any in an exclusively wealthy, but she does because she's not that.
Yeah.
So there's also this sort of exposé on like if everyone else does everything for you all the time, you don't have any of your own sense of like I can do something for myself.
Yeah.
It's like it's a bizarre, it's a really like deep, complex movie. And I feel bad about it still because I'm like, but the crew,
Yeah, sure.
Like his chef crew, I always am like, that doesn't feel right.
And that's kind of, it's a bit culty as well, right? Again, there isn't,
I wouldn't say. Is that a critique on the chef culture where the chef's in charge of everybody, literally?
I think this is also, I don't think there's any good guys here. I think that's the other thing too, right. That as much as we're desperate for like who's good and who's bad,
she's the
closest thing to kind of the positive force in it.
And surviving. She's like the only real worthy survivor in a way.
Yeah. Whereas they kind of are following the chef, I suppose, which is, again, a strange thing. But
that's what I wondered if it was a critique on that culture, because I've heard that chefs are kind of pretty Gestapo. And if you don't do exactly what they say, you're fired. And like it's a whole cultic kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did you watch the show The Bear? I know I'm distracting us here.
No, I watched one of the. I didn't have the time or space to get into it.
Amazing.
Yeah. That's what I've heard.
Best show in a while. And again, I really like food.
Things that make you hungry.
I do. Well, that's a problem too. I just watch YouTube cooking shows. That's like how I relax now.
What are the big takeaways in the movie? Where's God in it? What is God saying about it? So I think it's pretty obvious. It's a critique of culture, which I think is good to pay attention to. And like, what are we learning from those critiques? But how does faith inform this journey, and what do we do with it, this movie?
So much of just appreciating what we have. That's one of the things that comes up over and over again, just how much work is being put into these things and ultimately how unappreciated they are.
Yeah.
At one point they say, well, can we just get some bread? Like, no, you can't get bread. Mm-hmm. Well, we want bread. Yeah. Again, a very basic thing.
Yeah.
But like, no, you can't just have everything you want. There's so little appreciation, I think, in different ways. I think that's really important.
I thought too, tapping in, for me, one of the things I kind of thought my faith informed me through the movie was tapping into that thing, that something you create that gives others joy is actually your purpose.
Yeah.
And that goes off when you start doing that thing for other reasons, you get distracted so easily, even though it looks like it's successful.
Yeah.
You're way far away from what actually your real purpose is.
And he was a success, right? That's the point. He's the most successful chef in the world.
But he was so far removed from what actually gave him joy that he was willing to die over it. I thought that was an interesting thing to pay attention to, because I think this happens in our lives, is we get distracted by the thing that we were created to do well that brings others joy. And we get distracted by status and fame and money and wealth. And we go off that thing that we were created to do that brings others joy.
So one of the worst, when I was growing up, which is a while ago now, admittedly, but the worst thing you could do is be a sellout. So you compromise your values for money. And so this would happen with bands. You know, bands would get popular and then they'd sign to a label, which meant they could actually – it's so funny too, because a lot of the time it's just signing to a label, which meant they could afford to eat kind of things. Like, no, you're selling out. You're not doing it for the music anymore.
Right.
And some people really did sell out. And
Some people just have to get stuff done.
Honestly, right. I think it's like a lot of Christian bands sell out because they're like, well, what's popular now? I'll just do that. Like, I don't think there's integrity to that. So in my mind, I still have that selling out is the worst thing that you can do. But now I think culture has swung the other way. It's like, how do you get paid for this thing?
Yes.
So, you know, people have hobbies and like, and then instead of it being a hobby that brings you joy in life, it's like, oh, how can I monetize this on Etsy? And I want to be clear, if you want to make money on your things, that's totally fine.
Yes. But again, it's the driving principle.
Yeah.
It's like, what can I create that brings others joy?
Yeah.
And that actually is where you find your purpose.
Yeah.
So you get joy, but it's not your joy. It's the concept that what you created brought someone else joy that actually gives you purpose.
Yeah.
And that's a much deeper version of joy
than
what our culture would say, which is this like, how can I do something I love that gets me rich? So again, the end purpose again is money or whatever those things are, instead of what can I create? And then even I like the idea of like, maybe he didn't have to become a professional chef. Maybe he could just feed his kids.
And create
beautiful things that give others joy. And that could be purpose-driven. So that's another thing I think in our lives where we take these callings and beautiful things and we have to either monetize them or make them what we do with our lives.
Yeah.
Like there's just some weird things. Like why can't you just have a normal job and then give joy to
can you just enjoy
people that
things.
You love, that you create, that you love. Like, I know of tons of beekeepers that do it as a hobby and they love it because it brings other people joy. And they, you know, their faces light up when they're like talking about bees and helping other people with their fears or like whatever it is. This whole idea of like uber success and like ascension and money and distorts this original purpose of our lives.
I think even thinking about sermons, Danielle and I talk about sermons from time to time because it's a thing we do quite a lot of. And I would say it's interesting. Pretty much all the joy I get joy from the kind of from the creation. I do enjoy that. It's getting to spend time with God and in prayer and in scripture and all those things. But so much of it is dependent on how much, I don't know, joy or, you know, whatever emotion I suppose we're going for it elicits, you know. Because if it doesn't elicit the, I don't know, hope or joy or love or what kind of
that's
response
what kills
is.
You. That was what killed me in COVID era.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that lights me up is when I can see something I've created spark joy or response or revelation or insight. Or like basically I'm like the wide-eyed wonder of like, I think I get it. Or I think I get God, or I think I felt something, or I think I was moved, or whatever those things are. And then that brings me purpose because something I created brought somebody else this encounter. Really. And so if you don't get to see that sometimes, like, so I think there are some creative arts, television and all kinds of things where I mean, we're talking about these shows. Those people probably we will never fully know what kind of impact their show had, but that's a beautiful, beautiful thing to do with your life is to create something that sparks revelation and truth and joy and insight and hope in other people.
Yeah.
Which I guess is everybody's life.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah. And recognizing that looks really different for other people. But I think, yeah, seeing that, I remember watching a guy, I spent a lot of time in kind of pretty socialist places on the internet, I suppose. And it was a guy that works for KFC who was just trying to get a living wage. And he just said, like, I love this job. Like, I love making food for people. I love how happy it makes them. Like, I love that. But like, please just give me enough that I can get, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that kind
so
of,
I can do what I
so
want.
I think recognizing that people in all kinds of,
we're big fans phases, of the living wage, by the way.
Yeah. If at least,
you can go way back in our seasons and there's an interview I do with Lindsay Coley who talks about, her work creating or trying to help organizations create living wages for their people. It's a great way of like making the world a better place.
That's like pretty simple.
Helping people to create things that bring joy and life to the world.
Yeah.
In meaningful ways.
Yeah.
Any other God moments, faith informed?
I think it kind of exposes the ugliness of it, which I think it's important. I think it gives us a way to, I think it does give some pause for reflection. I think as well, I need to be, I mentioned earlier how much I like food and going out for food and everything. I think I need to be more thoughtful still, though. I think I need to be more grateful, even in kind of recognizing food insecurity around the world, right?
Yeah, like where this food comes from. Also, who created this food? Like what the ramifications are of this food being... Yeah, interesting.
Like I don't know, man. I know this is virtue signaling, but like I try to tip well just because I think that people are worth it. And... I find myself debating, like, if I'm ordering on like Uber Eats or something and it's like going between 18% and 20%, I'm like, I don't know if I really want to go that extra. It's like, it's 80 cents. Like, I'm like, I could drop 80 cents and never know. And
so, I have some problems with the way tipping culture has gone insane.
But I know, not because I'm
not generous, but because I think people deserve a living wage.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't be paying I should be making up the problem that corporations are creating by not giving their people enough money. But anyway, I also think we should tip generously.
I agree.
But I like that idea of being more aware and even like compliments to the chef and stuff. Like I remember one of my favorite memories was taking this guy out to eat. And this guy's like larger than life guy, like fully animated man. Okay. And I took him to an Indian restaurant in Vancouver and he got up from the table and said to the waiter, "Where's the chef?" And the guy's like, follow me. So he takes him in the kitchen and he kisses him on both cheeks. And he goes, "This was an exceptional meal. Wow. This was exceptional." And the chef is just like kind of beaming and like everyone's a little bit confused. And I'm like, I don't know if you're allowed to do that. But anyway, it was that, it's that kind of thing where it's like, I need to see the chef right now because whoever created this food did such an awesome job. I need to tell them. So like even stuff like that, I think it's just like such a beautiful.
And something missing in this movie, right?
That, and again, it's not about money. It's about seeing people and affirming people and like
gratitude,
sharing the pleasure of what this is, whether that is somebody that, you know, made your bed or like my little kid brings me a gift from school or like did a coloring thing for me to tell me that they love me. It's like, are we paying attention? Pay attention. Beautiful things are meant to be enjoyed and spark joy.
A part of a piece of scripture, which I quote often, people may be bored of hearing it by now, is to encourage one another daily. And I do wonder how we do at that, because I sense that probably we don't always quite hit the mark on that. And so, yeah, I think even in this movie, this guy's just been broken down by the complaints of people that want their food to be so perfect. And instead of
nothing's ever good enough.
Yeah, appreciating the 99% that's amazing and the 1%, like, what can you let go? Like, what does grace look like there? And what does it look like to be appreciative of what people have done? Yeah. I think we talk about this a lot, but, you know, just assume people are having a bad day and what can you say? I don't know. I'm hopelessly chatty with like cashiers at grocery stores. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they don't want to talk to me at all. And that's fine. I wouldn't want to talk to me either. But sometimes it clearly makes a difference saying like, hey, how's your day going? Like really appreciate what you're doing here.
Just seeing people as people worthy of affirmation.
It's like really cruel. Like,
and doing beautiful work. Like that's the other thing too, is really valuing what people do at whatever level they do it. I mean, this is kind. This is nice.
Yeah.
You know, this is, I'm glad you're here because this makes my life possible and easier and I appreciate it and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, I think those are some nice redemptive themes.
I'm really eager to hear what people thought of the menu.
And also